This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Nerds! Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, everybody, it's here. The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is officially upon us. Hey, I'm Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring, and we'll have you covered every single day with instant reactions to late-breaking signings, determining which players are, yes, truly in the best shape of their lives, and behind-the-scenes stories from all the excitement and intrigue that spring training brings. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's going on, everybody? And good morning. Today is Tuesday, March 4th. It is crazy. It's already March. And this is your daily Go Birds morning update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. I hope you all had a good Monday. It was, I will say, relatively warm outside. I went outside a few times. Mostly, I've been in the house looking up stuff for free agency, which we will get into on the second half of this pod, because I do want to get into some defensive tackles I think that the Eagles could target and should target, and it's an interesting position for them as well. But so that's mostly what I've been diving into. I hope you all had a good Monday as the week continues on. It is crazy. 1 week from now, I'm pretty sure we'll be in the legal tampering, or at least 1 week and a day away from free agency beginning. So things will start to heat up. Moves will start to happen, as we've already seen with the Eagles releasing Darius Slay. So I did an emergency pod about that yesterday and went into all the details about Slay's time with the Eagles, the contract implications of releasing him, the salary cap implications. Could he be back? Who's going to start for him? Next up, all those things. So check that out in your feed, as that is more of a deep dive into the Darius Slay release. But on this pod, we're going to get into, like I said, some defensive tackles that the Eagles could target. We have another update from Diana Russini. It feels like the daily update on Myles Garrett. And then Nick Sirianni did a podcast, not the Go Birds podcast, unfortunately. He should come on the Go Birds pod, not the Go Birds pod. But he did do a podcast. We're going to talk about that. But first, we do have a what's on the schedule for today, because if you are listening to this on Tuesday prior to 10 a.m., if it's just 10 a.m. now, maybe press pause, because me, James Seltzer, and our special guest, Brandon Lee Goutwin, will be live on YouTube at 10 a.m. talking about everything that's been going on with the Eagles, Myles Garrett, Darius Slay, all those good things, Zach Bond, free agency. So 10 a.m. on YouTube, make sure to check it out. And if you don't, that's okay. It'll be in the feed pretty shortly after. So you'll have another pod to listen to today. As, let's be honest, when the Eagles season ended, we all thought we'd get a break from the Eagles. Nope. Still thinking and talking about the Eagles all the time. So that is what is on the schedule for today. All right, let's dive right into it. Nick Sirianni was on Part of My Take, the Barstool podcast with Big Cat and PFT. I saw they were interviewing a bunch of people in Indianapolis. Nick Sirianni was one of them, and he went on, and it was a fun interview. I do think, I will say, that Nick is somebody I think has more personality than he has been showing over the past year. I would really say since the Cleveland incident, which we will talk about on this pod, and because he talked about it. But when I went into the interview, I was really hoping it would be like the Nick that sometimes the media gets to see off camera. And he still just holds back a little bit. He does. You know, hey, I guess when you're about to get like a $40 million, $50 million guaranteed contract, you play it a little conservative. But I do think that the negative reaction he gets sometimes for showing his personality has caused him to really go into his shell sometimes. And I'm not really sure that's the best idea. I'm sure it makes his life easier, but it is a loss for all of us, because I do think when he really shows his personality, he can be a really interesting, funny interview. So he did show a little bit of that on Part of My Take. They're good for getting guys' personality out a little bit. So let's dive into some of the interesting things he had to say. First, I wasn't going to start with this one, but maybe let's start with it. He kind of confirmed the story that was going around on the internet, and then I think the guy called in to WIP about it as well. But if you can remember all the way back to week 6 of this season when things felt ugly. They had just beaten the Browns, and Nick Sirianni turns to the fan and yells at him. Then he shows up to the podium and with the kids and the shaved head. And it was probably the low point of the season. You could argue the Bucs loss was, just because they lost so badly. But I would say that was probably the low point of the season. So at that time, if you remember, a fan said essentially what had happened. So Nick talked about it, and here's what he had to say.
Fans,
I didn't do that.
He encouraged you, right? Yeah. He was like, we got to run Saquon more, and you're like, I will. And then you did it,
and we did it. I'm like, did you like that?
Yeah.
He said yes, and I said okay. Yeah. And it kind of became a little bit more of a topic than it was.
Yeah.
The guy, do you know that guy actually called in and said he wasn't talking to the whole fan? He was talking to me, and he was having fun with me, and nobody went with that story.
I know.
The evils of the media. We'll listen to what we want to listen to, and not put out the.
Oh, yeah, we definitely spread that you were yelling at a fan.
Yeah, not me.
Absolutely. No, I think we did read it, because I think he wrote online. He was like, hey, this is me, the fan.
He was talking directly to me. That's what the guy said. I was talking directly to him, and I'm like, nobody even went with it. That story was written the way it wanted to be written, and that's where it went from there. Yeah. So. Mm-hmm.
So when me and James were talking about this on the pod, and everyone was mad about two things, the kids at the podium and the yelling at the fans. Like, to be honest, I wasn't mad about either, but I just conceded the fan thing because I felt like it wasn't a battle worth fighting. But now that we've heard the story as to what happened, the fact that after a win, he playfully yelled at a fan caused such an uproar really just speaks to the level of frustration fans had with the team and how much things of the bad blood from last year was still carrying on to the beginning of this season. Because there's no reason, when you rewatch that video now, it's actually hysterical to think how mad people were when you watch it. Like, the reaction to that was so visceral. The reaction to that was so ugly. And you just think about, like, how he had to apologize and, like, walk, you know, with his tail between his legs. Like, it was crazy. And I do think that's part of the reason he shows less personality now. But now that we know that basically what happened was a fan was like, hey, run the ball. And he was like, I'm going to run the ball. And then they won and running the ball. And he was like, I told you I would. And you watch it. And, like, he's smiling. Like, I don't know. It is crazy in retrospect how much heat he caught for that. So there he was talking about that. The other part of it, though, he was asked about the human shield. If you remember, he brought his kids to the podium after that game, and he was, you know, basically accused of using them as a shield to put criticism away, or shield him for criticism by having his kids up there. And so Nick was asked about that, and here's what Nick had to say.
It's so hard to win a game in the NFL. That my moment was never to be like, I'm going to shield him from a tough question. We just won the game.
Yeah.
Miles Garrett jumped over. We were up, what, 10-0? And it was about to be 13-0 and a half. He jumped over someone, blocked a kick, and they returned it for a touchdown.
Yeah.
It's hard to win.
Yeah.
And so my whole thing there was like, let's go celebrate the win. Some people in the media didn't take it that way.
Yeah.
So I got it. So my wife said, no more kids up at the podium anymore.
Yeah.
The kid thing for me was always at the time I thought crazy, but especially now, because if you notice in there, he says like his wife doesn't want him to bring the kids up anymore. That's sad, you know, like to think that he didn't bring them up to the podium at the Super Bowl or like after the NFC Championship game. They like to do it. He wants to do it, and he literally can't do it. Because the last time he did, everybody flipped out so much that, like, and understandably, his wife probably doesn't want the kids, like, being the focal point of, you know, 2 million angry Eagles fans. Like, I get that. But it is kind of sad to think about. But it's just interesting to hear him talk about those things now, considering he's sitting and doing this interview as a Super Bowl champion. And at the time, there was legitimate talk because of, like, the fans and the kids that he would legit be fired. And so just crazy how much things have changed. And, you know, I think he'll always carry that, the reaction to that with him, like just how mad people were, the kid thing. I think that'll be a scar Nick really, really does carry with him and like remembers. I think Nick obviously loves Philly. He loves Philly fans, all those things. But I do think he was genuinely really hurt by the reaction to the kid thing and like the yelling at the fans thing. And I think you can hear it a little bit when he talks about it. Like he, you know, he talks at one point in the interview about how the criticism makes him better because he learns from it and you need it. And I think that's all true. But I do think it goes to like what I thought this team's attitude was all year, which was like an angry focus of like, you guys don't think we can do it? Like, okay, watch us do it. And boy, oh boy, did they sure do it. So the other two interesting things I thought Nick said was talking about, he was asked about the field in the 2022 Super Bowl. And I thought his answer on it was interesting. So here's what Nick had to say about the sod father in losing in 2022.
And now that you're a couple of years removed from the first Super Bowl, I think you can say without it seeming like sour grapes or like you're complaining about it, but the grass, the sod father from the Chiefs, he fucked you out of that Super Bowl.
You know, the whole time during the parade and really a couple of the celebration, it really was the parade. I was like, it just, I don't know. It's just the way the way it is sometimes. You're like, man, I wish I'd have been able to do this in 2022. And so that, and it was like you're enjoying it, and the parade was awesome, and the people of Philadelphia are unbelievable, and the celebration was great, the players, everything. But there are moments that you have when you have the beer in your hand, you got to point it over to the crowd, like, man, I wish I'd have been able to go through this 2 years ago.
So yeah,
we weren't. You know, they beat us, and they had to play on that field too. So yeah. I'll never give an excuse on that. So.
Don't you just hear a little bit of Jalen Hurts in that answer with him saying basically like he's on the float at the parade celebrating the Super Bowl and he's thinking, man, it would have been cool to win this in 2022. I've said so many times that I think Nick and Jalen have so much more in common than people want to make it to be. I think because Jalen can be quiet and Nick can be, you know, really vocal and, you know, active and his hands are moving, that they're viewed as so different. But at their core, they're so similar. And this is another similarity where I think the losses stick with Nick the same way they stick with Jalen. Maybe not as much. Like Jalen seems super, like he said it changed his soul. But I think it changed Nick too, losing in 2022. And to be on the parade and think about, man, it would have been cool to do this in 2022 and not just once. I think that's a similarity to Jalen. I do. I think that they both carry their losses with them. I think they both really are motivated by failure. And I think in a sick way, like the failure sticks with them more than the success does. And I think that is a good thing moving forward. But yeah, I just, when I heard that, I heard a little bit of Jalen in that answer. All right. So the last one I wanted to play that I thought was just a cool clip was, you know, they were kind of poking him on like, when'd you know it was over? When'd you know it was over? And here's what Nick had to say about when he was pretty sure that he had won the Super Bowl.
What point during the Super Bowl were you like, we got this, it's over? Because I know the coach speak, you can be like, it's, you know, you got to play 60 minutes. You never know, it's Patrick Mahomes. But I mean, come on, halfway through the third quarter, you're like, this is, it's over. We got this.
You know, in 2022, we were up 24-14 at halftime and they were getting the ball to come out of half and they went down and scored. You know, and we were up 24-0 at halftime there, and they were getting the ball coming out of the half. And so we knew how important that drive was going to be. You know, I think at 40, when we were up 40-6, I remember saying to our staff, I'm like, I think let's take the starters out.
Yeah.
And one of the coaches was like, Coach, you sure? There was like 6 minutes left. And I go, yes, I'm sure. We can take starters out right now. Let's get everybody in the game and let's them all play. So I think it took a long time. That's a phenomenal team we played with phenomenal coaches, with phenomenal players, maybe one of the best players of all time on the other sideline. And so it wasn't, hey, until the fat lady sings. We knew at some point,
yeah,
it was 40-6 with 5 minutes left to go, we could be there.
So a couple cool things from that. And it really stood out too in the mic'd up where the players are constantly being like, you know, it's not over. It's not over. It's 0-0. It's 0-0. Like they can come back. And it comes back to the 2022 thing. Now, I know a big part of the players saying that with like Saquon, and Saquon wasn't there. But, you know, he brings up that in 2022, they were up big. The Chiefs score on the first possession of the third quarter, and then ultimately they come back and win the game. And you could just tell that he knew the first possession of that third quarter was huge. And, you know, it is crazy. So Mike Florio recently had Andy Reid on his show, and he got kind of mocked online for saying, you know, could have gone either way before it was 24-0. And yet, it is absurd. In retrospect, the Eagles are absolutely never losing that game, and it felt like they had complete control. But there was a moment, like prior to the end of the first half, it was 17-0. Patrick Mahomes has the ball. If they go and they score and they get the ball to start the third, you're potentially looking at a one-score game, you know, 4 or 5 minutes into the third quarter. But Zach Bond obviously intercepts the ball. The Eagles score. It's 24-0. And the start of the third quarter that Nick references in there, they don't get anything going at all. So, yeah, I also thought it's a cool thing, like, to say, let's pull the starters and play the backups. You know, I think that it's something you would think about if you could like sit and watch the game from your couch on a sideline trying to win the Super Bowl, to think, hey, let's try to get the backups in. That's pretty cool. Like, that is, you got to really believe in that to think about that at that moment. So the fact that all those backups got in for the Super Bowl, I think that's it just shows what a great coach is, that he thinks of those things, that like Tristan McCollum and Sidney Brown and, you know, the backup receivers and Kenny Pickett, they can say they played in a Super Bowl. I know they probably know they didn't like super actually play in it, but still, a very cool thing for them. And I thought that was a cool thing by Nick. So definitely good interview. I would go check it out. It's about a half hour. It's a good listen. Always good to hear Nick talk. So the latest rumor, as our daily Myles Garrett rumor comes out, is once again from Diana Russini, who writes in an article this time about what she's hearing. And here is what Diana Russini writes about the Eagles and Myles Garrett. Quote, I'm told the Philadelphia Eagles' interest in Garrett is real. As fearsome as Philly's defense was in the Super Bowl, imagine adding the 2023 Defensive Player of the Year. Garrett could be this year's version of Saquon Barkley for Howie, one NFL GM said. He's an impact add and isn't a free agent overpay. Howie's not afraid to try stuff, and it fits where they are as a team. How would the Eagles come up with room to fit Garrett? By letting some key members of their Super Bowl winning group walk. Linebacker Zach Bond was a free agent gem Roseman found last offseason, but he is now poised to cash in. Bond, edge rusher Josh Sweat, defensive tackle Milton Williams, and guard Mekhi Becton headline Philly's free agent class, and bringing all or even some of them back could prove challenging, especially if Garrett enters the picture. And you can be certain Roseman will have Philly in the conversation for Garrett. So maybe not a ton new there, but just again, like, everyone around the league expects Howie to go after Myles Garrett. And I think the real takeaway is this, that whether Myles Garrett is traded or not, and I think he will be, the moment Andrew Berry decides, not even like to the rest of his staff, let's say Andrew Berry's doing a Peloton, working out, on a walk, at home, watching a TV show, not really paying attention and thinking about Myles Garrett. I think the second he decides he should entertain trading Myles Garrett, the first phone call he will make is Howie Roseman. I think before he calls anybody else, while the rest of the league is still sitting around wondering when he'll call, I think the first call he'll make is Howie. And that's why I think all these rumors do matter, because time and time again, Andrew Berry and the rest of the league is hearing Howie wants Myles Garrett, Howie wants Myles Garrett, Howie wants Myles Garrett. And I think Howie is just going to be sitting up in the front office at the NovaCare with the assets to do it, with the cap space to do it. And when he gets the call, they'll get it done. That's how I think this is going to go. I think the Browns will come to Howie about it. Andrew Berry is going to need a lifeline if he trades Myles Garrett. Howie, he's close. He's worked there. It's not in the conference. Like, I just think it makes so much sense that if they decide to move Myles, Howie won't try to screw Andrew Berry. I do think Howie will pay a fair price. He has a relationship with him. So that's how I think this will go down. Like, as soon as Andrew Berry decides they need to move on from Myles Garrett and it becomes a distraction, and or they you know, in the draft or whatever, they really like somebody, that's when I think you'll get it done. And I'm pretty sure the first phone call Andrew Berry will make will be to Howie Roseman. So, speaking of defensive linemen, on the other side, let's take a look at some defensive tackles that the Eagles could sign in free agency, a position that, look, they're going to lose their probably best free agent at in Milton Williams. So that'll be on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors. So as we continue our look at some free agents the Eagles could sign this offseason, we did the edges yesterday. And if you remember for the edges, there was a few things I was looking for. But one was definitely a young edge. I think with Nolan Smith, Jalix Hunt, and like what edges cost to sign, you're looking at adding a young player there that's going to cost big money. Are there veterans they could add? And they could probably use a veteran there. Yeah, I think so. I think a bit of a veteran presence would be a positive on the defensive line. But I think that applies more to defensive tackle than it does to edge. So if you look at the defensive tackle group, obviously if they have Jalen Carter, who they're expecting another huge year out of, but they have Moro Ojomo, who I think could have a Milton Williams type of year this season. When I say that's going to be harder to replace Zach Bond than Milton Williams, Moro Ojomo is why I feel that way. They don't have a Moro Ojomo at linebacker simply because Jeremiah Trotter and Nakobe are not the same players that Zach Bond is. So when I look at how they're going to replace Milton Williams, I think Moro Ojomo is there and can help them. So I think the need for like an impact guy is less than it is at edge. I think what you want at defensive tackle is a little bit more of a veteran, someone with a proven track record, so that if Moro doesn't step up into that role, or honestly, even if he does, he's not going to be able to play a ton of snaps right away. Like, he's going to go from being a part-time player. You don't want him to go into being like 70% of the snaps. So you're going to need a veteran to pair with Moro Ojomo next to Jalen Carter. And I just think with the edges where they are, like, you're going to need a bit of a proven defensive tackle in there. So with that being said, I still think youth is important. If they're going to sign a free agent, they're not going to be shopping at the top of the price market. Otherwise, they would just re-sign Milton Williams. But I think that when you're looking at defensive tackles, I was a bit more open to an older age player just because I think they could use a bit more of a veteran. Honestly, a lot of the defensive tackles were a bit older anyway than some of the edges. But I still think you want to look for a defensive tackle that maybe isn't playing a ton, has good numbers and limited production, is just ending his first rookie deal, is a bit on the younger side ideally. Like, I think the profile is the same. I'm just more open to a veteran at defensive tackle than I am at edge. So with that being said, let's dive right into it. So the first defensive tackle I think the Eagles should target, this isn't in any order, to be honest, but just one of the guys I think they should target, is Jerry Tillery from Minnesota. So I remember talking about him a ton before the draft in 2019. An important note, the Eagles did have him in for a visit, for a pre-draft visit, so they're familiar with him. He was a first-round pick in 2019. If you remember, that was the year they took Andre Dillard, so didn't really work out for them. And the team that drafted Tillery, it didn't work out for him either. He was with the Chargers. He ends up playing last year with Minnesota. But he's still 28. He'll be 29 in October. So you're kind of getting his year 29 season. But he had 17 total pressures last season. Nothing outstanding. But twice in his career, he's had 30-plus hurries. And then he had 29 in 2023. So he's been close to, he's had 30 or more twice and almost 30 in 2023. To put into context, I think Milton Williams had 54 last year. So it's not a massive number, but it's not nothing either. Like 30 pressures from a defensive tackle, to me, that's like the bar for, okay, he can get after the quarterback. So I think Tillery has shown he can do it. And I don't think he's going to cost a ton because he's coming off a year where he didn't have a ton. Again, 17 isn't nothing, but it's not a noteworthy number either. So I think he has some experience. He's familiar with the Eagles. So I think, and he has the first round pedigree, which we know the Eagles value. So Jerry Tillery is definitely somebody I would keep an eye on. The next one, Roy Lopez, 27 and a half years old. He had 18 total pressures last season. So similar to Jerry Tillery. His passing rush numbers are not great. 3 sacks in 4 seasons. He did have a forced fumble last year, which we know I'm on the lookout for this year, considering how much they value forced fumbles. And then only 9 quarterback hits in 4 seasons. So he's a true, like, has played a lot of games as a veteran backup guy. I think Jerry Tillery, there's a bit of upside. Roy Lopez, you know what you're getting. He's a Jordan Davis type of player, like, fine player. I wouldn't be a priority guy, but he brings veteran experience. And for what it's worth, he was the top rated pass rusher on Arizona last year from the defensive tackle position. So I think he might be a little bit better than his numbers indicate. But yeah, his pass rush numbers are not good. I just think as a analytic analytical darling, if you want to call him that, since he was their top-rated pass rusher. I think Roy Lopez could be an interesting signing from a veteran perspective. Okay, Benito Jones out of Miami. So he's 27. He turns 28 in November. He had 16 total pressures last season, 2.5 sacks in 4 years, 8 tackles for a loss, 13 quarterback hits. What I like about him is he hasn't missed a game in 4 years. He's 27. So I know I called Roy Lopez a bit of a veteran. That was probably kind of strong. As soon as I said it, I wish I didn't. Roy Lopez is not really a veteran presence. He just played a lot of games and is solid. Benito Jones would fit that description as well. Again, not very impressive pass rushing numbers, but 16 total pressures, and he'd be really cheap. I think both him and Roy Lopez, you're looking at cheap contracts. Tillery as well. So with the edge guys, there were definitely some more expensive options in there, but I think at defensive tackle, you're not looking at spending a lot of money. So now let's get to two guys that have really good pass rush numbers that could be, you know, impact signing. So the first is Levi Onwuzurike. I looked that up. That's how you pronounce it. Levi Onwuzurike from Detroit. So he is 27 years old. He had 47 pressures last season. So again, Milton Williams had 54. Levi, 47 last year and only 27 years old. Now, his sack numbers aren't great. 3.5 sacks in 4 years. He missed all of 2022 with a back injury. And in 3 seasons, he has 4 tackles for a loss and 16 quarterback hits. So his numbers overall aren't that great, but 47 total pressures last year is crazy. That is a really, really good number. So I thought initially when I saw the 47 total pressures, he'd get paid. But Spotrac predicts him to only get 2 years, $9 million. Some people have said he could get over 10 a year. Some are saying as many as 15. But I don't know. Like, 27 had a great year last year, did miss a full season with a back injury. So you wonder what the medicals are there. And his sack numbers just aren't that good despite getting to the quarterback quite a bit. So I think it'd be a really good signing. 47 total pressures is awesome, especially if you can get him for 2 years, like $9 million, like Spotrac thinks. I think that'd be a big time deal. So Levi Onwuzurike, I think, makes a ton of sense as somebody for the Eagles to target. Okay, next up is another guy with some good pressure numbers last year and also has some pretty good pass rush numbers overall. So Javon Kinlaw of the Jets, drafted by the 49ers, was a first round pick in 2020. He had 30 total pressures last year. Again, for me, that's kind of the cutoff between that's a really impressive number for a defensive tackle or not. 8 sacks, 11 quarterback hits, 9 tackles for loss in his last 32 games. So pretty good production, you know, less than 2 seasons, 8 sacks. That's pretty good. 6'5", great athlete, long. So I think with him, the appeal would be the first round pedigree, as well as the fact he's coming off a year with 30 total pressures, plus the 2 forced fumbles, which, as you know, I'm obsessed with this offseason. So Javon Kinlaw, only 27 years old. And again, I think kind of like Tillery, the first round pedigree is really appealing with him. So Javon Kinlaw is definitely someone else I think the Eagles should keep an eye out for. Okay, a few more. Tyre Tart, first of all, Philly native, so always be fun to bring a Philly guy home. But Tyre Tart of the Los Angeles Chargers, 28 years old, 18 pressures last season. He was the top-rated pass-rushing defensive tackle on the Chargers and only 1 forced fumble. Now, his numbers over the last 5 years are not great overall. 3.5 sacks, definitely not something that jumps off the page. 21 tackles for a loss is intriguing. He's getting behind the line of scrimmage somewhat frequently, so that's an encouraging number. 19 quarterback hits, so he's gotten to the quarterback more than the 3.5 sacks would indicate. And again, at 28, below average pass numbers for sure, but intriguing enough. And he's expected to only get 1 year, $5 million, according to Spotrac. So Tyre Tart, another one to keep an eye on. Okay, so this guy, I was very impressed with when I found, and it does teach you how focused I am in on the Eagles, because I'm like, wow, this guy has good numbers. Adam Butler of the Los Angeles Raiders. So he's 30, so a bit on the older side for sure, but he's not going to get much money. Spotrac projects him to get just under $6 million over 2 years. 31 pressures last season, 5 sacks last year, which is really good. And get this, 27 sacks in 7 years, which is an awesome output. He has 10 sacks combined the last 2 years. Now, he did miss 2022 due to injury, but since then, he's been awesome. Because like I said, he had the 10 sacks over the last 2 years. And what really stands out to me when you look at his stats is just the consistency with the sacks. So he had five sacks, two sacks, four sacks, six sacks, three sacks, two sacks. Kind of felt like I was singing a kid song there. But just consistency, consistently getting to the quarterback, consistently making plays in the backfield. 30 years old, like, I'm into some Adam Butler as a signing, especially with that number. Brings a veteran presence, consistent, coming off two really good years. Really good year last year with the five sacks and 31 pressures. I think Adam Butler is a name they should definitely keep an eye on. So this next one, I was surprised to see his Spotrac projection for his contract. I would think he'd get more than this. So Tershawn Wharton, someone we talked about leading up to the Super Bowl, which the Eagles won, a very good player. I would say it's the Chiefs' Milton Williams, if that makes sense. Now, I think the difference is Milton Williams has probably been a little more consistent than Tershawn Wharton has. So Tershawn Wharton, 26 years old, 42 pressures last season, so right around what Milton Williams had. 6.5 sacks, so more sacks than Milton Williams had. Just an awesome pass rusher. Like, if you sign Tershawn Wharton, you're kind of just replacing Milton Williams. And I think Milton Williams is better, to be clear. But I think Tershawn Wharton is a similar type profile. Now, like I said, the thing I would say with him is he's a bit of a one-hit wonder. He had 7 sacks the previous 4 seasons before racking up 6.5 last year. So, again, similar to Milton Williams, maybe he's just coming on and his best football is still ahead of him. Had 11 quarterback hits last year, 15 the previous 4 combined. So, really was awesome in his contract year. Spotrac has him at 3 years, $22 million. That seemed low to me. If I could get Tershawn Wharton for 3 years, $22 million, I would absolutely do that in a heartbeat. I mean, $7 or $8 million, whatever that, yeah, a little over seven average per year. I would absolutely do that. I think, you know, people expect him to get more than that. I would do $10 million a year for Tershawn Wharton. Now, at a certain point, you might get to where we'll just re-sign Milton, but I think Milton's going to make way more money. So Tershawn Wharton, if they make like a splash defensive tackle signing, and I don't think they will, Tershawn Wharton would be someone to keep an eye on. Okay, the last one I have, another veteran presence guy with awesome numbers, Jerron Reed of the Seahawks. So he's 32, 48 pressures last year, and 4.5 sacks. Again, veteran experience. He's played in all winning organizations, Seattle, Kansas City, Green Bay, 11.5 sacks the last 2 seasons combined, and he's consistent. Kind of like how we talked about with Adam Butler. Look at these sack numbers for Reed over the past few years. 4.5, 7, 2.5, 2.5, 6.5, 2, 10.5. Like, he just has really been consistent in getting after the quarterback. Now, Spotrac projects him at 1 year, $5.5 million. I think he'll probably get a little bit more than that, but he would be a nice veteran signing. Again, been in winning organizations. He's probably one of, or close to winning a Super Bowl if he was with the Seahawks. I can't remember off the top of my head if he was there, but winning organizations, veteran guy, put him next to Jalen Carter. I would think has experience with Clinton Hurt too, since he came from the Seahawks. So I like a Jerron Reed. I think he would make a ton of sense. So just to recap, I really like Jerron Reed. Adam Butler, I have an interest in. Levi Onwuzurike, I think makes sense. And then Jerry Tillery, another player. So those would probably be my top four that I think I would go for from the tackle position. So overall, those are the tackles to keep an eye on in free agency. I do think it's a position they will be active in. It's just a matter of how much they are willing to spend. So that'll do it for today's Daily Pod. Thank you so much for listening. As always, he's Elliot. I'm James. Talk to you guys later.